that worked. Good morning, everyone. Fantastic to see so many of you here this morning. And we're thrilled to be here jointly with the Institute for Welsh Affairs to be talking about a smart energy future for Wales with you all. And before we start, some very brief housekeeping. There is no fire alarm planned. So if you hear an alarm, please make your way out using the fire exits, which are on each side of the room. And you will find bathrooms back towards the stairs that you came in. I'm going to hand briefly to our translator just to make sure the equipment is working.
If you haven't used these before, if you don't understand Welsh and somebody contributes in Welsh, you've got one of these on the table, please don't take them from the room. The way they work, I don't want to see anybody auditioning for Star Trek, so just clip them onto your ears like that with a black piece facing outwards, and then there's an on-off switch and a volume control underneath, which is a tiny wheel. If you want to try them now, we'll make sure that they work for you.
Thank you very much. Fantastic. Can't wait to hear from our fantastic lineup of speakers this morning, looking at how energy data could transform all parts of our lives, not just in energy and the way we behave as users of energy in that market, but also far beyond the way we interact with our neighbours, the way even we might interact with government and with providers of healthcare services in future. Really endless possibilities. We have two workshop sessions during the course of the morning, facilitated by our colleagues at ARAD Research, to gather your thoughts and insights on the challenges ahead, how some of those might be overcome, and what you would like to see this smart future taking shape to look like. So can't wait to hear what you've got to say on that. We're also very pleased that Ron Loveland from the Welsh Government has joined us today to share his thoughts on the energy challenges for Wales within the government's Smarter Living Agenda, and also the energy efficiency strategy. Thank you very much, Ron, for joining us. So I'm Claire Morm. I'm Director of Policy Communications at Smart Energy GB, and we're the voice of Britain's smart meter rollout. And obviously this transformation is starting, and essential part of it is a smart meter in every home, and new technology is already transforming the way many of us across the country are using and buying our energy. So 7 million smart meters already upgraded around Wales, England and Scotland, and for those people that's really a moment, I think, when we realise how far behind the way we use and buy our energy is with all other parts of our lives. So when you get a smart meter, no more estimated bills, seeing in pounds and pence what you're using, suddenly a realisation, gosh, I wouldn't dream of phoning my mobile phone provider to tell them how many text messages I'd spent this month. I wouldn't dream of getting an estimated bill at the supermarket. I'd be pretty surprised if I was in a taxi and the meter went up in litres of petrol or diesel. But this moment when we have visibility over what we're using, really potentially a nudge to all sorts of new engagement by consumers. So as well as a transformation in technology, also a transformation in markets and a transformation in the way we all behave. So we know already that those 7 million smart meters are being used. So a vast majority of people who have them are taking steps to change the way they're using energy around the house. 8 in 10 of them say they love their smart meters, and we talk to people around the country all the time who talk about the discoveries they've made and the new ways that they found to bring their bills down after they've got their smart meters. And we know that that engagement grows over time, and we'd love to hear more from you about what you think the challenges ahead could be and how we could make sure that engagement grows. So smart meters are an essential stepping stone, but only one part of moving to this smarter future. So without further ado, I'd like to invite Oriol Meller, director of Wales's leading independent think tank, the IWA, to tell you a bit more about the workshops in the morning. Thanks, Oriol.
Thanks very much, Claire. Good morning, everybody. I'm delighted to be with you today, and like you, I look forward to learning much more about what's happening here in the field of smart energy and what could be happening here in Wales. First, I'm going to say a little bit about the IWA for those of you who don't know us yet, but I'm delighted to see so many members already here as well. We are, as Claire said, Wales's leading independent think tank, a membership-based organisation with nearly 1,000 members across Wales and well beyond, and we've just celebrated our 30th anniversary, so we have a strong track record. There are two particular ways in which the IWA works. Firstly, we provide a space for independent comment by stimulating constructive debate on any issue of relevance to Wales. In addition to our ongoing events programme, events like today's in partnership with forward-thinking partners from across academia, the public and private sector and the third sector, we offer an online space, Click on Wales, as a platform for comment. If you're not already a subscriber, you probably should be. 27,000 unique individuals visited Click in the 3 months to April this year, so we have substantial reach, and it's free. Secondly, we work collaboratively to help shape and develop critical thinking in the five areas that are our priorities: the economy, education, governance, health and social care, and the media. We take the long view. We convene experts, practitioners, and people with lived experience to devise practical proposals for improvements to feed into the policy-making process. We broker influential relationships, bringing together unusual combinations with different perspectives. We're not bound by assembly terms. Rather, we're interested in the game-changing ideas that can transform the Wales of the future and helping make them happen. Energy is just one of those game-changing ideas for Wales. The IWA are just over 1 year into our three-year Re-energising Wales project. And Re-energising Wales will provide a fully worked-out plan to enable Wales to meet its projected energy demands entirely from renewable sources by 2035. Six separate work streams focusing on demand, supply, the economics, community ownership, and regulatory political opportunities will come together to help provide this fully worked-out plan. And a central theme running through all of these work packages is the role of smart energy and the emerging smart, decentralised energy system of the future. A radical shift in how we power our lives, and one that is already creating huge opportunities. Data is key to the IWA project. We've held a data energy workshop and are supportive of the need to develop a data framework for Wales with Welsh Government and other partners. We know that we all need good data to build a strong evidence base to influence and improve decision making. Whilst there might be specific technical challenges, one of the main challenges lies with people, as Claire said, and companies, and how the consumer is fully able to adjust and engage with smart energy systems. Systems need to be flexible enough to meet people's different demands and needs and ensure that certain people, particularly those most in need, aren't negatively disadvantaged in the move to a smart energy future. We also need to address legitimate questions about the role and responsibility of those who work with data and the expectations and privacy concerns of the public. Smart meters and good data are part of that solution. Smart energy has a crucial role to play in a wide range of areas relevant to the IWA's project, including the need to reduce energy demand, help ensure local demand and supply balancing, and more. It's encouraging to see a focus on smart technology in the themes of connectivity, digital, innovation and skills within the priorities of the city region deals within Wales. Our Re-energising Wales project is carrying out a case study of the Swansea Bay city region and has therefore particularly developed links with the region and the Internet of Energy priority, which seeks firstly to place the region at the forefront of energy innovation and establish the region as a globally significant player in the production and storage of energy, then to create jobs and investment while addressing challenges such as fuel poverty and energy security for current and future generations. And then lastly, to digitally connect the region's energy assets to create a testbed for the demonstration of future energy systems. We're also exploring the potential for a collaborative project to convene expertise and build on existing learning from existing smart cities, both in the UK and well beyond, with regards to the new city regions in Wales. Technology and data can play a vital role in the city region's success, not only through improved local economies and public services, but in better understanding the particular needs and priorities of the populations themselves who make up the region. We believe that we're uniquely placed to convene, build consensus, and galvanise action to ensure that we make the most of this timely opportunity and the capacity of digital technology. So I'm very pleased now to be able to introduce our next speaker, Professor Ron Loveland. You'll have seen from his bio that Professor Loveland's a very experienced member of the senior civil service in Wales and has worked extensively at the industry-government interface on technology, innovation, enterprise and energy matters over the last 35 years. Following his tenure as Director of Sustainable Energy and Industry in the earlier Welsh Assembly government, he was appointed 5 years ago as the Energy Advisor to the Welsh Government, with a mix of pathfinding, advisory and ambassadorial roles associated with helping to deliver ambitious, clean and smart energy objectives for Wales on a joined-up government basis. Prior to holding these positions and following a much earlier research career in the public and private sectors, Ron was a Chief Technology Officer responsible for advising the Welsh Assembly Government on energy, steel, telecommunications and more general sustainable business development policies. He's currently exploring with a wide range of stakeholders how innovation in energy technologies, buildings, markets, government activities and planning regulation will all help create a low-cost, low-carbon energy system for Wales, the UK and beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Ron Loveland.
Thank you, Oral, for that introduction and in my spare time. Borodar. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Can I first of all thank Smarter Energy GB and IWA for arranging this conference, and it's great to see both new faces and some old friends and sparring partners in the audience. In my job as Energy Advisor to the Welsh Government, I try and undertake a pathfinding role, looking forward as to where we're going on energy, across the whole spectrum from energy efficiency through to nuclear power. And my job is getting increasingly difficult. And that's because there are an incredible number of what I call whirlwinds out there. There's an energy whirlwind with various funnels associated with decarbonisation, which is clearly, from a world government perspective, really important that we have our decarbonisation plan or carbon budgeting plans in preparation at the moment. There's a funnel associated with the localization of energy, which we're very much talking about today. And there's a funnel associated with transport. And that funnel takes me to the second whirlwind, which is around digitalization. The Internet of Things is going to change our world in so many ways, including in the energy world, including in the transport world. And those of you who are interested in sort of low carbon transport must be fascinated by where we not only go with electric vehicles, but where we might go with autonomous vehicles. And clearly there are major energy consequences from that. We also have the whirlwind of social media. If you think about many of the big events that's happened not only in the UK but around the world, social media has played a big part in that. And in the world of energy, because we are moving to a much more consumer-centric world, social media is going to play us a big part. Now, those three big whirlwinds of energy, digitalization, and social media affect everybody. So wherever you go in the world, America, Australia, Europe, they all matter. In the Wales and the UK, we also have some other whirlwinds around devolution, around Brexit, and now, because they keep adding on top of one another, we have the issues around how does the UK government make policies from a minority government perspective, and that is not proving to be easy. With all those whirlwinds, we know where we're going in general, but in detail, whichever experts you talk to, they all admit that they don't know where we will be in detail in 2030. So what does that mean? It means, I think, and Ofgem are the leading sort of advocates of this, we need to be in a mode of trialing, piloting, learning from experiences, which is what we are already doing in Wales with programmes like Smart Living, where we're working with a wide range of partners, including local authorities, DNOs and other stakeholders, to really try out some of the ideas that you'll be discussing today. And events like today will hopefully help us on our way. From a Wales perspective, we can split the energy agenda into the national and local. National clearly is around Wilver, Swansea Bay Tidal Lagoon, big offshore, big onshore, etc. That's not what we're discussing today. We're talking about local, which means community energy, Local consumption of local energy generation, flexibility of demand, provision of heat, charging of EVs, etc. But perhaps most of all, change from our homes and workplaces from being dumb to smart. Now, I've been given a signal that I must finish, so I won't go into that world. But let me leave you with the thought that with the Internet of Things, and you'll hear, I think, from Michael Fell to a degree on this as well, we can have smart homes, not only from the energy perspective, but from the health perspective, the media perspective, the security perspective. And if we put all those together, and Jeff will be talking about various business models, including multi-utility providers, we could be in a very interesting world indeed, with smart leading the way and enabling us to move much more quickly to the low-carbon energy system that we want. Final thought, talking to somebody yesterday about the problems of moving from where we are now to where we want to be in 2030 and beyond. And he said, it's a bit like, at the moment, we have a horse. In the future, we need a bicycle. Question is, how can you change the horse into a bicycle without killing the horse? Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Ron, for that amazing holistic view of where we are and where you are steering the Welsh Government in that. I'm sorry we cut you off. I was looking forward to hearing how we can solve Brexit and the challenges of a hung Parliament this morning, but perhaps we can do that over coffee. Can I now introduce Dr. Jeff Hardy, who is part of the research team at Imperial College, has been doing some fascinating work on new business models and smarter energy. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the organisers for the invitation, and thank you all for coming this morning. So I'm going to talk about how we might buy energy in the future. And I'm going to talk a little bit about data, I'm going to talk a little bit about business models, but I'm also going to start off with the privilege of going first that gives me the opportunity to talk about system change. Why are we talking about this in the first place? So, there are, as Ron has already talked about, lots of drivers of change going on in the energy system at the moment. So on your left, I have broken these down into various drivers of social, economic, environmental, and technology. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these, but let me pick out a few. So we know from a social point of view that we are moving to cities, we are getting older as a population, and we are increasingly wandering around with a device of some sort in our hands or at home, firing data around constantly, telling someone what we're up to all the time. We have economic drivers. Energy and economic growth are still coupled, but that is decoupling over time. We have still distribution of wealth. Read into that distribution of energy issues, so fuel poverty, etc. And we still have a very heavy government hand on what is the paradigm of energy. So what is the direction of travel on energy policy? What is the direction of travel on data policy and so forth? So this very much shapes what our future could be. Environmental, we've already heard about the decarbonisation agenda, but we also have increasing evidence of impacts of climate change on critical infrastructure like energy, flooding, storms, etc. And we also have an issue with visual amenity, which is basically nobody who doesn't really have a say in energy infrastructure wants it anywhere near them. You know, if they don't own it, if they don't share in its benefits, they don't want it built near them. And that's probably quite fair. And then we also have all of this technology stuff going on that Ron's talked about. So falling costs of key technologies, photovoltaic panels, batteries, electric vehicles, but also platforms coming through like sharing platforms, peer-to-peer platforms in other sectors. We have artificial intelligence, machine learning to take advantage of all of this big data that's out there with unknown impacts, benefits in the future. And we also have increasing amounts of smart stuff, phones, smart devices. I saw, in fact, I was advertised a smart hairbrush the other day, which A, is not very smart, but B, why on earth? It was 150 quid. Anyway, what we're, as a consequence, going from is this energy system that was pretty unidirectional. So from suppliers to passive consumers, from centralised generation to passive consumers, and with very few large actors in the system, that National Grid could phone up and say, can you turn up or turn down? And what we're going to is this essentially electronic spaghetti. So this is a World Economic Forum diagram, and there's two points to take from this, because they think it's going to be a very consumer-led future. So one is that consumers themselves are going to be potentially very engaged in the future energy system. So they will be able to produce, sell, and influence energy. But also there is going to be technologies, digital and otherwise, in the home that could shape consumer energy demand. So get those consumers themselves flexing their demand up and down, either automatically or in response to price signals. So suddenly National Grid, instead of phoning up four or five big players, puts out a signal to a market and 100 million devices react, which is quite a different world to be in. Now, one of the reasons why there is an opportunity here is because of the financial opportunity. I'm not going to dwell on this very much, but some work that I've been doing together with Energy Research Partnership and the University of Leeds has identified that there are new business opportunities for energy utilities of the order of around £12 billion a year. There's also an opportunity of £6 billion a year of avoided costs in 2050. And these opportunities are around the ideas of energy service provision. So things like providing all of the energy services to a predominantly electric vehicle fleet, for example. Same possibly for electric heat. Same possibly for other new services that I'll talk about in a minute. So it's just to kind of like put that economic incentive out there. Now, there is a small problem with this, and I do apologise that a lot of my thinking is in the form of animals, and I don't know why that is. It probably says something about me. But there are a number of business models that want to come to the market to start to deliver these new services and access some of this new value. So they may look like a diversity going into this funnel, but when they come through this funnel of what is essentially the energy regulatory rules and the industry rules, what they end up with, because they have to meet all of these criteria, they all end up looking rather similar. So you go from beetles and owls through to a succession of dogs. And if you look at most of the energy suppliers in the market, the business model is the same. And that is because of the prescription required by the rules. So what we need, if we're going to unlock this new value, is an evolution from the dog to all of these different sorts of business model. And that is what Ofgem is thinking about with the regulatory sandbox approach. But it's also what's needed more broadly to allow this innovation to thrive. And it may not be energy-led. So it could be health-led, as Mike and David are going to talk about. It could be some other service-led, and the energy comes as a byproduct with that. So it may be much more about your lifestyle than energy just is one of the enabling factors in that. This is just to briefly say that as well as the things I'm presenting today, I'm involved in various other things. I've talked about the first two, and I'll talk about particularly society-led low-carbon transformation at the end. But I'm also doing a project with Energy System Catapult and Laura Sandys, and that is about what could the regulatory environment look like for these new business models if you started from a blank sheet of paper. And I'm also running a project, I'm working on a project funded by UK Energy Research Centre, which is thinking about what is a viable community energy business model in a post-subsidy world. So how does that work? So coming back to the white paper that I produced with Smart Energy GB about how we could buy energy in the future, what I was thinking about was this idea that consumers are going to have to play a more active, or consumers should ideally be playing a more active role in the future energy system. So no longer is supply supplying passive demand. It's actually turning it around, because supply may be more intermittent with wind power, solar power, etc. So what you really want is for that demand side to be much more following the available supply. And what I did in the paper was I went through three different business models: peer-to-peer energy, energy service companies, and lifestyle service providers, LISCOs, so-called. Now, I do want to make the point, it's not winner takes all with these. You are going to have a smorgasbord of business models in the future. These are just three examples of what might be there. And for a consumer, you may have a proposition that you can choose from any combination of these sorts of models in the future. So don't let me lead you to think that this is the only three business models that are going to happen in the future. I just chose these three to take a point to an extreme. So if I introduce them really briefly, peer-to-peer energy is basically you as a consumer selling energy to other consumers. So you might have a solar photovoltaic panel on your house, you might have a battery, you might have an electric vehicle that can do vehicle-to-grid, all sorts of things, so you are directly trading your electricity with another consumer. And there are examples of this already happening. So Open Utility ran a trial with Good Energy called Piclo in the UK. It didn't quite end up, once again, how they intended it when they started because of the rules and regulations. And there's another company based in Australia called PowerLedger who are doing something a bit more like the pure version of that, using blockchain as the way of kind of like contractualizing those energy transactions. An energy service company is where a company enters into a long-term relationship with you to sell you energy services like comfort, illumination, mobility possibly. And as such, what they're not trying to do is maximize the amount of units they're selling you. What they're trying to do is maximize the efficiency of delivering that services. So it may be the case that instead of just supplying you with heat via gas, they might want to insulate your home to minimize your heat requirements. And then the final one is this lifestyle service provider, which is a little bit like, let's say, Google runs your life. So Google comes along and says, I can make your life awesome. I can take away all of that time it takes you to switch between all of your utilities, like entertainment, broadband, energy, water, whatever it might be. Let me do that on your behalf. Let me take power of attorney to do that, to take financial transactions on your behalf, and thus begins a beautiful relationship, whereby they learn lots about you, they maybe add further services and become something like an energy or multi-utility service company over time, and perhaps things change. So they may say one day, okay, do you know your home is 25% less efficient than your neighbours? Do you want me to install insulation? If so, I can pay for that up front, let's get into a long-term contract. Or perhaps you come home one day and your car is gone because they took that decision on your behalf because of the service agreement that you signed with them, allowed them to do that, and you now have an autonomous vehicle service. It depends. The devil will be in the detail, as in most of these things. So really briefly, in the paper I talk about the consumer impacts and the energy system impacts. So with peer-to-peer, the consumer impacts, which is a little house, the consumers become really directly engaged. There's potentially new revenue, new opportunities for consumers in there, but it could be a much more complex environment, which means if there's no third-party intermediary to help you with that complexity, maybe only those who can really engage with it will benefit. On the energy system side, then it could drive the rollout of microgeneration, batteries, etc. It could lead to a much more locally focused energy system, and it could lead to the end of suppliers, as we know it. So moving to a different model. On energy service companies, then what we're talking about here is bill reduction and stability for the consumer over a long period of time. There needs to be a mindset shift from per kilowatt hour, per unit of energy to services, being warm, being mobile, etc. And then there's going to have to be a different relationship, because most of these things are capital investments up front, insulation, new kit in your house, which pays back over time. So this is going to be a long-term relationship, and there's always going to be issues around switching in and out of that type of relationship. And for the energy system, then this could lead to demand reduction across the energy system, i.e. needing to build a smaller energy system as a consequence, much smarter homes, lots of home energy management systems and so forth, and it could unlock to some extent demand side and flexibility, because that could be a way of the energy service company interacting with devices on your home to drive down your bills by providing that flexibility on your behalf. And then the lifestyle service provider, well, it could make your life more awesome. That will probably be a selling point at some point. It will probably make your house smarter, full of things like Alexa and so forth that will just be predicting when you need milk and whatever it might be. And it could lead to lower bills. If that's a driving force for the contract you've entered into, so it's switching on your behalf to seek value, it could lead to that from a consumer perspective. From the system perspective, what you're essentially creating is engaged consumers by proxy. So it's someone making you appear to be an engaged consumer, but not you being engaged yourself, being engaged for you on your behalf. Now, of course, it depends on what the motivations of that company is in how they engage in things like flexibility services to the market, because it might not be in their interests. across all of the other services they're delivering. So the incentives need to be there. Again, it could drive the rollout of smart homes, and again, it could lead to demand-side flexibility if incentives are aligned. So in another bit of work I did that I launched at a breakfast briefing about 2 weeks ago, I was looking at a variety of other sorts of business models, but what became apparent in different business models in the future is that there are really common drivers for any sort of new business model. I'm not going to go through all of these, so I'll summarise them on the next and final slide, but things like service standards. The general gist that came through in a load of interviews I did, in a load of workshops I did, was service standards have got to improve, particularly for energy. There is very low trust in the market. There's a really big issue about how you make contracts that work for all consumers, so homeowners versus renters, vulnerable consumers versus well-off consumers, healthy consumers versus those with health issues. All of those things are apparent. But let me, since I've had my notice, sum up, because I'm going to cover most of these points anyway. So in that work, there were five things that came screaming out of the research. One was, how do you create the space to try these new things? And I think we'll hear about some of these examples of what these new things could be today. How do you make sure that all of these smart devices and the data you need to drive all of these consumer benefits is A, interoperable, so things can talk to each other and you're not locked into one particular way of doing things, but also secure from that point of view. So how, that could be smart meter data, it could be phone data, it could be social media data, whatever it is. I talked about service standards need to be better, and that also we need solutions for all consumer situations. But the other thing that came really strongly through on this is if you have a diversity of business models, and we still have an 80% carbon reduction target, which I think we will, how do you make sure that they are incentivized and that regulation or policy is targeted on these new business models to do the right thing from a carbon perspective? Because it might not be. And if it isn't, then how are you going to change that to make sure it is? For all of this diversity, so all of those animals I put up earlier, how do you make sure they're all walking in the same direction? So that's all I wanted to say this morning. Thank you very much for your attention, and we'll take questions, I think, in panel later.
Thank you very much, Jeff. There's a copy of Jeff's white paper on each of the tables that they collaborated with us on, and it's also available at our website. I'm going to definitely check out the smart hairbrush. I mean, Jeff, you're absolutely right to point to the issue, the historical issues of trust in the way we all interact with energy suppliers. Interestingly, we know that when people have their smart meters fitted, their trust, not only in their own energy supplier, but in the energy industry in general, increases as a result of that experience, but also as we found from the way consumers interact with data in other markets and become willing to share their data also creates so many more opportunities for new players in the market too. So very, very exciting. Now I'm going to introduce Keith Jones from the National Trust. What Keith's done at the National Trust is absolutely fascinating, transformational. He's also going to talk about his and the Trust's involvement in a particular community energy project in Wales. Keith, thank you.
Thank you. I have no animals, and therefore I'm already down on John and David. But I'm a wearer of many hats. So, yes, I work for the National Trust, but I'm also a director of Community Energy Wales and various other organisations. Why would Europe's largest heritage organisation get involved in this? It's all about, for me, relevance. We all consume energy, but also for a charity, it's also looking at diversifying the income stream to do the core work, which is conservation. So the Trust publicly have committed to 50% of its energy coming from its estate. It's currently investing $35 million into that, with a subsidy market and regulation framework changing all the time, everything falling off a cliff. How do we diversify the income as well as the relevance to the communities and the people around? Then there's Keith Jones, Community Energy Wales. It's all about benefit and retention of benefit. Local generation, local consumption, local benefit. How can we do it within the existing dog-shaped framework that we have at the moment? We're not asking for anything exotic. How can it be done? And what I've got, one main example of, should we call it a pilot, a learning opportunity, not a series of joined up problems, but a learning opportunity all the way through, which is the Ynni Lleol, which is local energy. I'll cover some of the nitty gritty, but 15 minutes is a bit. If we had 15 hours, I may be able to cover some of the challenges. The market, as I explained at home, is something like this, with lots of complicated interconnectors and stuff. We make energy, we sell it to a supplier then sells it. Let's not go into balancing mechanisms and embedded and everything else that comes out of it. But as far as a community energy company is concerned, it makes energy, it sells it to the grid. 200 metres away, somebody in the community buys it in from a supplier. It leaves at 5p. As far as they're concerned, it arrives at 15p. Who's laundered it in the middle? And why are we paying them to sponsor rugby teams and all sorts of other stuff in the middle? So this is the challenge that we have, is how can we join up the thing that makes to the consumer, and that they can see value and that they can get benefit from doing it. I've been personally looking at this area now for about 10 years, and everybody says, no, have a look. And I should have put the cover back down for a while until somebody else had a look. So I'm not the brains behind this. It should be Dr. Mary Gilley that's standing in front of you. She is the brains behind this. I'm sort of the networker in this, bringing people and some money and various other bits and bobs together to the operation. So we set communities sell energy, and if you've got one project, then you start talking about embedded benefits, then you go down, they're lost at sea, especially because no two suppliers give you the quote in exactly the same way. So it's for some strange reason, I don't know why, they don't give you the quotes in exactly the same way. So how does a non-informed or a slightly less informed generator get best value, but also how do they move benefit through to their community? This is the traditional model. We go to 6 or 7 companies. What's that worth? I don't know, because they're not all quoting the same way and they're assuming different factors inside the thing. So in North West Wales, there's a network of community energy companies called Cyd Ynni, Energy Together. And so as a group, we decided, after making contact with Mary and various other organisations, to do a pilot, a trial, a test, using data, virtual aggregation as we're calling it. So how can we bring stuff together to get maximum benefit by use of data from individual households and the generator, and balance locally from the main substation, basically. So we picked an area that had a track record of working with a community. The advantage of Bethesda, they've got there's something called Partneriaeth Ogwen Partnership. They've got an office on the high street. That was their main factor in this. They had an interface with a community. Wales is noted for having some of the oldest housing stock in Europe, highest levels of fuel poverty, everything else. Because we're talking often about informed individuals. We're not talking about those most in need. And this whole pilot's been interesting, that the ones most in need are the ones least likely to change. Of the 109 people that have signed up, I reckon 4 or 5 are in proper fuel poverty. Because when I go through what we go through, I can't explain it properly to my wife unless you start from a baseline of knowledge in there. So getting other people who are not engaged with the entire sector and that have been promised lots of stuff from lots of suppliers and then being let down, that's a challenge. But the advantage of this one, it is peer-to-peer communication. They're talking to each other. This thing has saved me. I know what's going on. You should have a chat with. So a whole network of stuff is happening around it. The transfer of data is a small part in the whole overall communication strategy for the project. But so what we've chosen, this is the Scottish Power heat map. Basically, it all works from a primary substation. The generator going in and the consumers coming out. It's centred around a primary substation, which is in the middle of Bethesda. It doesn't have to cause a bit of confusion. I'm in that valley, why can't I get this energy? Well, actually, your bit of the village was built later and you're getting it from over the mountain. And why are they over the mountain getting the energy from it? Same thing. So it did, again, communication was critical to this. But we also made it clear that this is the start of the journey, because we wanted to learn, and boy, have we learned through this whole thing. But we've only been live since last November. We're seeing the benefits to people's bills directly. But that's part of it, is are they engaged with the data? Do they know what's going on? Are they making informed decisions when stuff needs to happen? I'll show you a little bit later on. So it's a group of organisations that are all interested. Primarily, the driver to start with was benefit, and the social housing groups, fuel poverty, energy assets on meter interfaces, open energy on interpreting the energy for the consumer. How can you, because kilowatt hours are completely meaningless to 95%. Most of you are okay, but people, is it a wheelbarrow full or a transit full? What is a kilowatt itself? And then main funders, but mostly thanks to Welsh Government, this thing is continuing to grow. So I tried to explain it at home. So I work in pictures. So this is it in essence, which is we have a main supplier. That they're the licensed supplier in the system. It happens to be Co-op Energy. They've been really good with us, but it could be anybody else. Once we started, we had a lot more interest from suppliers, because the concept wasn't dog-shaped, but sort of a mongrel a little bit, but it still had to behave like a dog for the regulator in there. So what we've got is, we started calling it a community energy services organisation, but that was just jargon. In the end, it's called an energy club. Locally, it's a cooperative where the generator and the consumer form an entity. We agree an internal market price, because basically we're supplying the electricity virtually ahead of the meter. So everything else is from the meter. The supplier also takes any spill, any extra. This happens to be a hydro. Hydro works quite well in terms of the profile matching from the community versus the production level. PV for me is slightly more challenging, but the host social housing groups were telling me that their clients are home when it's sunny quite often, and therefore there's a match there as well. But what we were also trying to do was to square the profile off, so getting some small to medium enterprises that are using in a day, and people at night, and people at home, to try and square this profile so you don't have too much leaving and don't have too much coming in into the system. We had laudable aims. This is Energy Local, the technical arm of the pilot, in terms of what they want to do, which is construct 60,000 small energy clubs that aggregate and aggregate and aggregate as they get higher. Because of this primary substation challenge at the moment, we're having to do one community club, another community club, another community club, which is quite good for recruitment, which is quite good, but you are duplicating a lot of processes through it as well. But we're still in pilot, we're still learning. This was the modelled example that we used initially, based on the data from the substation versus at the hydro profile, what we were hoping the benefit would be just for one energy club. This is benefit. This is not income. This is cost saved versus additional income to the hydro itself. So we were hoping that the hydro would contribute £30,000 more benefit. For us, the National Trust, does it give us more income, which means we can do more renewables, considering the subsidy system's falling off a cliff at the moment. It's not enough, but it did prove there is a way of generating more income. But it was also when we were building the hydro, which is about half a mile outside the community, the first time ever I've had community members come to the build site to thank us for building. So to me, that showed engagement, that showed ownership, because they could see benefit coming from it. Because to all intents and purposes, as far as they're concerned, this is a London, Swindon-based organisation building something and taking everything away. But they could see that they could benefit directly from this thing. So this is what the community is doing. This is the, I took this last night in terms of, this is what the hydro is doing within the supply for the community. But because we're aggregating everybody, we're also able to offer them a time of a four-section time of use tariff as well. There's all sorts of opportunities coming out for reshaping and profiling and all sorts of stuff from this, because we now have data of what's going on. How can we help? Where does the battery fit into this system? What's the economic benefit? What's the return on it? There's a lot of bits because we now have data. The smart meters, we're aggregating it, we're using, we're sending this through to the supplier, but we have live data that goes back to the consumer. This is the community, but each household has this coming back to them on an app or on a laptop or on whatever. But it, at the moment, it doesn't solve the primary objective, which was giving people options who are in fuel poverty. Doesn't deal with heat at the moment, but if you want to use the electricity for a heat pump or something, there is that element and charging up and off peak. And the, at the moment, it's, we're in the proof of concept bit. The, if you just dial into the website below, that you'll see what's happening in that community now. But of more interest, when you talk to the people in the community, they don't really look at the app, they look at the weather. If it's raining, they'll do something with the electricity. It's actually, it raises a smile now every time it rains, for some people. This is, for me, hot off the press. So this is the National Trust. We're doing something new with our main broker supplier in trying to add value to this stuff. Because we've got a fairly unstable market at the moment, how can we get the peaks for our wholesale selling without the risk of the troughs as it happens when it's sunny and windy and the market drops through the floor? So we're in November, there's no wood here to touch. In November, I'm hoping that we'll be going out with our main supplier, Co-op Energy, to offer something new. Co-op are the broker, the suppliers, Scottish Power. We're hoping to come out with something called an in-day trading versus sleeving. What that really means is 24 hours before, if the market drops below a certain level, we've agreed 5p wholesale at the moment, we will move this electricity to our consumption sites. If the market's over 5p, we'll in-day trade the next day in order to get the benefit from the peak. What makes all of this happen is the supply agreement, not the selling agreement. Because within our supply agreement, we haven't got something called a take or pay clause. We don't have to take the electricity from the main supplier, which means that we can move the electricity from MPAN to MPAN, matching half hour meter with half hour meter. That's the biggest thing that we have. But we modelled last year's production data from two or three of the bigger hydros, and we were showing a 40-45% uplift in it. The other advantage of this is the broker is willing to give us a backstop price as well, as long as they can share the uplift, the upside of it. So as far as I'm concerned, this is part way to dealing with that subsidy drop in terms of giving us the energy. Because what's happening is that the one thing that we have to do is, because we're aggregating to what's called a clip, a 5 megawatt clip, we're going to have to, so I'm really going to go down jargon here, I apologise now. We're going to have to shape the profile, so we're going to have to match solar in with hydro in order that we take off the peaks and troughs out of it. So it's a better quality profile, so that the supplier's happy with the shape. Because the trust has a certain consumption profile versus what you're exporting. What that all means is I'm hoping we'll make more money and that we can move the electricity. This is a national thing. This is not within DNO. This is within our power purchase supply agreement. I'm hoping that this is something that local authorities could look at. I'm hoping that larger consumers who are also producing electricity can get more benefit from doing this. But it has to be at least 5 megawatt. If 10 megawatt's the ideal size for these clips that are trading. But this is about a week off the shelf at the moment. So you've got both ends, and both ends are interested in retaining benefit from it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. Incredible, inspiring, pioneering work to make a community enthused about energy meters, about something being constructed in their backyard, and about rain. Incredible. And you're absolutely right to provoke the question of how smart technology can benefit people who really are at the sharp end of the experience that that many are having in this market at the moment. I mentioned earlier the seven million smart meters already out there. Interestingly, the adoption of those does not follow the adoption curve that we would commonly expect from new technologies, because actually people who are older, people who are not working a regular working day, have often been those who've been able to have the appointments to have smart meters installed and are then even more motivated to use them to bring their bills down and avoid the unknown bill, which for many families can be a real source of pain and stress. But perhaps we could talk about that more in questions and in the workshops that we are to have. So can I open up to questions for Jeff or for Keith? Yes, thank you. I think we have a microphone.
Sprinting towards you.
Please do introduce yourself with your question. Thank you.
Hello, Mark Wilson. I'm also a county councillor, and I work for Cardigan Bell College as well as a lecturer. My question is really about engagement. I think one of the issues that we all seem to see here and everywhere is the complexity of this market. And I think from a consumer point of view, it is extremely difficult to get price transparency, to get real knowledge and understanding about pricing and delivery as well. I mean, I get phoned up, like a lot of you do, in the night, in the afternoon, by these companies trying to sell you this new energy. And you go into these energy deals, they promise you this, they promise you that, and they already deliver. And I think really, we need a much more open market for people to be engaged. But I think what happens, we all lead busy lives. We don't really have enough time to understand what really we should be spending our money on. So the question I'm asking to the panel is, given the context, do you think it's really the role of Welsh Government, perhaps, or maybe the public sector agencies, such as local authorities, to get more involved and actually to have a more of a bigger input into this marketplace, as opposed to allowing the market, which is totally, it seems to me, dominated, controlled by an oligopoly?
Thanks very much for that question. You're absolutely right. I mean, anyone with an analog meter who's tried to look for the right tariff, even if you are someone who is fully empowered in perhaps other choices you make as a consumer, it can often be a temptation to lose the will to live and to stay on the tariff you're on. And obviously, data is one way of taking back control of that. But can I ask Jeff, have you got any thoughts on whose role within this is it to take away that complexity and to engage consumers?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. I guess there's two elements to it for me. So one is, what do we really mean by engagement in this context? Because my personal view is, no matter how transparent the price, so if we go to second by second time of use tariffs or something like that, people are not going to live their lives through an in-home display unit, kind of like panicking about when to turn on the dishwasher or something like that. It's never going to happen. Now, if we're talking about my world of the evolution of animals or whatever it was I was talking about, that would mean probably immense complexity at the consumer end. So many offerings, because of all that data we're putting out there, both smart meter data and other personal data, the ability of a company to target you on the basis of your consumption patterns, on your lifestyle and everything else will be, it's there now, it's going to be increasingly there in the future. And if it's also possible for different businesses to operate in the market, then that means from a consumer perspective, it could be super complicated or super simple, because there is always that opportunity for someone to create that, to take that complexity and then bring it to you in a package that works for you, because they understand what proposition is going to work for your life on that. Now, who is it that's going to enable that, if you like, variants of offers, that evolution of business models to happen, then I think it has to be driven in part by government. There has to be a desire to have this complexity. It has to also be driven by regulatory change. It has to also be driven by a review of industry rules, the codes, and so forth, because, you know, they are, it's very difficult to change them at the moment. If you think regulation is quite prescriptive, then get into the industry codes and you'll soon find out what prescription really means. But I think also it needs to be driven to some extent by consumers, not consumers demanding to have kind of time of use tariffs, but propositions coming to market that are really attractive and consumers choosing them. Because it's always possible in this era that someone is going to somewhat ignore the rules of the system and take a proposition to market and then sweep up a few million consumers before anyone blinks. And suddenly someone spots that it's an energy company because that wasn't what it sold itself as.
Really interesting. I think the really interesting provocation. Thank you. I think the question of how far people are happy to give over control, which would take the complexity away and in the process change their relationship with whoever is providing them energy, is fascinating. We're hearing later from Dr. David Shipworth and his team at UCL, who did some fascinating research, must be 3 or 4 years ago now, looking way before any consumer engagement on smart technology at a national level had happened, on how ready consumers might be for dynamic time of use switching, where their heating, where the commitment to them would be that their heating, their home would stay at a certain level, and within that, the appliance would switch on and off depending on when energy was cheapest. And we found that I think one in three consumers, even at that stage, was happy to try one of those tariffs. So very interesting. Did you have any learnings from Bethesda that would tell us how ready we are for a world of less complexity, but perhaps less control too?
Because one of the pieces of work that's being done for Bethesda at the moment is we're generating a tariff signal. We're saying it's this price at the moment because we're generating on it. But you're not going to sit at home, 3 o'clock, it's raining, I'll now do my washing in there. So one of the outcomes from this project is we're piloting hubs for making decisions. I don't want something on unless it's less than 8p, because it's not critical to my lifestyle. Switch that thing on now. Because, for example, most heat pumps, especially European manufactured ones, are already set up to take tariff signals. So what we'll end up is, how much are you willing to pay? Not how much are they selling it for? Because the moment you start aggregating, and because these algorithms are everywhere making decisions on your behalf on everything at the moment. So if you've got 10,000 customers who are all in a half hour using a certain profile, the market isn't dynamic enough at the moment, but I want this, I've got 10,000 customers now who are on. Can I have this amount of energy? So we'll move that energy to you. So I don't think it will be transparency in terms of, because the regulatory framework, I just showed you a very small section of selling energy. Buying is as mushy and more as that. So unless there's a root and branch change, but there'd be root and branch change to an old system. So I think in the future, you'll be virtually looking at, do I want Marks and Spencer's electricity or Lidl electricity? What will it be that I want out of this system? And how much do I want it to be? And then by mass, and I agree that I think the once some of the very large blue chip companies, the Googles of the world, move into this sector, it will have a revolution. And it won't be driven by government. It'll be driven, the government will be trying to catch up all of the time. So it is coming, but I haven't got a clue what shape it'll be.
But it will be awesome. I thought it was Lego that was awesome, not Google. But anyway, yes, sir, please. So microphone just behind you.
Johan Bellin, yn gweithio I Simon Thomas, Aelod Cynulliad, a wy hefyd yn aelod o Sefydliad Materion Cymreig. Y cwestiwn fi eisiau holi y panel yw be mae'r Llywodraeth Cymru gallu wneud I roi hwb I y diwydiant, a hefyd ydych chi'n meddwl, be ydych chi'n meddwl ynglyn â syniad o cael cwmni yn ei cenedlaethol yn ei Cymru sydd wedi cael ei trafod. Bydd yn cael ei redeg fel cwmni nid am ddifidend ar hyd braich o Lywodraeth Cymru.
Thank you very much. So, suggestion of a national Welsh energy company. Do you have any thoughts on that?
O'n i'n ddarn o'r ymgynghoriad i fiawn i hwn. A dyn, y cwestiwn cyntaf dwi bod tro'n gofyn ydy, pa broblem mae hwn yn ceisio sortio? Achos os na pristio yn sydyn, mae egni cymunedol ar y droed cefn. Achos da chi'n talu gyn gymaint, achos bod chi eisiau ydio allyriadau carbon, ydio, a mae pob wneud bob dim, ydio, ond fe'r rhaid cael blaenoriaeth i cwmni. Felly mae'n rhaid penderfynu be di'r blaenoriaeth i'r cwmni mae gynta, cyn bod rhywun yn deud, da ni angen cwmni i sortio pa broblem, dwi ddim yn gwybod ar y funud. A dyna'r mewnbwn o'n i'n deud, os na slodi tanwydd ydio, ffain, nawn ni cael 2-3 bwerdu glo a nawn ni sortio falle, na o. Ond di hynna ddim yn sortio allan y problem carbon o gwbl yn tai ydyn ni dan eisiau ynni adnewyddol ffain. Be sy'n digwydd bod tro dwi'n meddwl am cant y cant ynni adnewyddol, dwi'n meddwl am chwefror sych cymylog tywyll pa mae'r wlad mae eisiau fwy o ei drydan a dan ni'n cynhyrchu y lleia ohono fo. Felly dwi'n dallt, meddwl am Glas Cymru neu Dŵr Cymru a be maen nhw yn neud yna. So dwi'n dallt be di'r meddylfryd tu nôl iddo fo. Ond mae rhaid meddwl dipyn bach tyfnach i be mae'n trio. Be di'r blaenoriaeth ohonyn nhw gyd? Achos da ni'n gofyn lot o'n cwmniau egni ni yn gymdeithasol, yn garbon, yn egni, yn tlodi tanwydd. Yn fo, be di'r blaenoriaeth i'r cwmni yma? Wedyn mae rhaid siapio fo fel yna. Ydy ni'n mynd i'r farchnad a defnyddio un o'r 30 odd o cwmniau sy'n yn barod yntau, ydy hwn jyst yn broses brandio ydy o, er mwyn i bobl gweld bod o'n hollol glir lle mae'n trydan ni'n dod o'n fel arfer, mae'r hatach prynu fo'r interconnector o'r nuclear yn Ffrainc, ond mae ddim mynd i fewn i hynna o gwbl. Dyna'r sialens dwi'n reid yn ôl bob tro ydy be ydy'r blaenoriaeth i'r cwmni yma. Bydd i Gymru pa fath o fydd, bydd carbon, bydd i'r dyfodol bydd costa egni, dwi'm yn gwybod ar y funud.
Thank you. Well, one final quick question. Yes, please.
Mark Gale, wheelie engaging energy education delivered simply, which are weeds. And weeds are something that once germinated, they will always grow. First of all, a comment is that on energy, what we want is often is outcomes, as was commented, but it wasn't going to stress. But I'm involved with Bristol Energy Network, and I go to meetings, and it frustrates me because lots of people who are the consumers will come to the meetings, and they will moan about their bills, but they want the swap. And I say, I'll sit with you, and I will speak over the phone to actually change your supply. They say, oh, I don't want to do that. But yeah, people want to moan, but they don't want to engage. And on the smart metering, from what I understand, and I may well be wrong, is that the meter will only speak to the current supplier. So if you want to swap suppliers, you then all the meters have to swap. And I just find that staggering, that a meter is not a universal thing that will work with everyone. So that's a huge disincentive to change. Comments, please.
Sure, absolutely. There's smart meters have been designed to be interoperable between suppliers. I mean, one of the main reasons for wanting to go digital was exactly the engagement that you've described, lack of engagement, which is there, some of which is caused by having analog meters and just not having the tools to move around. At the moment, when people have smart meters in their first technical specification, many, many of them can switch supplier and take all of their smart benefits with them. They're never stopped from switching, so you're never in a worse position than you would otherwise have been getting a smart meter right now, and the owners of those 7 million meters, many of them, a vast majority of them, say they feel in a better position to be able to know what tariff is right for them. But you're right, some of them at this early stage are finding when they switch, and that switching process is absolutely as it is for anyone, but when they switch, some of them lose some of the smart functionality, and those meters will be enrolled into the into the network. But in the meantime, there's been such huge benefits for people, you know, for families who until now had been waiting for a bill that they did not know, even if they were reading the meter religiously, they were unable to know what would be in that bill. You know, that transformation really is transformed, and I can't see an argument for delaying that. And we speak to people around the country all the time who are really their experience, particularly if they were on prepay key meters, has been transformed by this. But you're absolutely right that engagement is a huge challenge. I don't know, Jeff, you've got any final thoughts on the role of engagement in helping the market move to the greater choice that you've described?
Yeah, so two quick points, and I think I'm completely with you about this focus on outcomes. Firstly, I don't think there's a very common vision anywhere from kind of like national politics, regional politics or local politics about exactly what energy outcomes it is we're seeking. And partly that comes from the fact that we don't ask people about this. And it partly relates to the fact that because we haven't had a conversation, because we're going on this decarbonisation journey, right, we haven't really had a conversation with the UK population or the Welsh population or the Scottish population about what it is they want out of that. They're paying for it. What do you actually want? What values do you want to see embedded in that low carbon future that you're paying for? The second side of it is the engagement point. I'm with you. I don't think those 60% of people who do not switch want to engage with that side of the market. I think, and that's why I feel bringing in the opportunity for different propositions, different ways of kind of like people interacting with energy, could actually engage with them on their own terms, you know, in a way that they're actually suits their lifestyle, that kind of improves their lifestyle in some way, or at least kind of like doesn't put hassle on it.
There's the engagement side, but there's also, right, this is Keith Jones, Community Energy, Llanberis, and Energy, speaking now. There's also the service level from the suppliers.
Yeah.
And there are many other suppliers, I'm being BBC here, there are many other suppliers, but the service level we've had from Bristol Energy has been stunning, knocked out the park in comparison to many of the other suppliers that we've been working with, because they've solved problems. They've not highlighted that you have a problem, they've solved the problem. So there are many other suppliers, and there's probably other people with good service levels, but it's something to learn from in terms of the people engagement, because you then get trust. Once you solve a problem for somebody, you're useful. So there is that element, not just how we communicate, but how we work and interact with them as well.
Thank you very much for those fantastic questions. We're going to move into our first workshop session, and I think the questions are going to come up behind me. So please do in your groups, and you have a facilitator on each table. We'd love to know what you think of the questions. You know, why aren't more people interested in energy, taking up some of the provocations that have already come from you? What would it take to engage consumers, make some of the things that Jeff has spoken about and Keith too a reality for more people across Wales? And how important could automation and behaviour change be as factors in that? So we will reconvene in, I think, 20 or 30 minutes. Thank you.